The other day, a man walked up to the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. He's decked out in full military fatigues, and he's filming himself. When he arrives, he states that he will, quote, no longer be complicit in genocide, and that his suffering was minimal compared to that of Palestinians in Gaza. Then he sets down the recording device, pours some kind of liquid, and sets himself on fire. As the flames grow, you can hear him shout, Free Palestine. The Metropolitan Police Department said he later died at the hospital. The man was Aaron Bushnell, an active duty airman in the Air Force. Now, self-immolation is a form of political protest that dates back to the Vietnam War, its resistance taken to an extreme, tragic end. But demonstrations opposing Israel's retaliation against Hamas in Gaza have taken many forms. A lot of people around the world are fed up with the death and destruction. So the question is, does it have an end date?
President Biden, for his part, said that he believes that there could be a ceasefire by the beginning of next week, but no one else seems to be quite as optimistic as he is.
Today, why the talks for a hostage release and a pause in the fighting may be far from the finish line as a key deadline draws closer. From CNN, this is Tug of War. I'm David Rind. CNN's Jeremy Diamond is here with us today. He's in Tel Aviv. And Jeremy, as we sit here on Tuesday morning, where do things stand on ceasefire slash hostage release talks?
Well, David, it's clear that there's progress that's being made towards a deal. And this deal could see the release of some 40 Israeli hostages, a 6-week pause in the fighting. What we've learned is that Hamas appears to have backed off some key demands, including softening their demand for a full withdrawal of Israeli forces and the end of the war. And also they seem to be demanding fewer Palestinian prisoners than they first were in exchange for those Israeli hostages. But the question now is how much progress and how close they are to an actual deal.
Can you give us a sense of when you think that ceasefire will start, sir?
Well, I hope by the beginning of the weekend. I mean, the end of the weekend. At least my national security advisor tells me that we're close. We're close. It's not done yet. And my hope is by next Monday, we'll have a ceasefire.
President Biden, for his part, said that he believes that there could be a ceasefire by the beginning of next week, but no one else seems to be quite as optimistic as he is. In fact, an Israeli official told us today that they were, quote, surprised by Biden's timeline, and they don't know what he's basing that assessment on. And Hamas, as well, is also pouring some cold water on some of these reports of progress, saying the leaks they've seen portray, quote, false sense of progress. But what we do know is that the time is certainly ticking down. We have less than 2 weeks until the start of Ramadan, and Israeli officials have indicated that if there isn't a deal by then, that a military offensive into Rafah will move forward.
With that said, how serious do we think Israel is about approaching these talks? Because I thought I saw the other day that Israel was sending representatives and they weren't going to just listen this time. That really, I was like, they'd just been sitting there listening? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it was like the before last round of talks. Israeli negotiators who went there were really in, you know, listen only mode, as it was described to me. But now they are actively negotiating. And part of that seems to stem from the fact that Hamas has actually moved off of its initial negotiating position. Hamas, of course, is disputing that. But it does seem like there is some movement. Now the question is, how much is the Israeli government willing to move? Because it's clear that there is still a significant gap that needs to be bridged.
Yeah. So what is the mood then on the ground in Israel as this drags on, this really complicated process just keeps going and going?
Well, there's no question that there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of frustration and even a lot of anger. I mean, we saw this past weekend as there were significant protests in Tel Aviv blocking off roadways and driving police to fire water cannons and detain several people at these protests. You know, really, for the hostage families, I mean, this is the most nerve-wracking time. I recently traveled with several of these families, about 100 different representatives of hostage families to The Hague in the Netherlands, where they went and filed a report with the International Criminal Court alleging war crimes violations by Hamas. And while I was on the plane with these families, you know, we talked about this very period of time when there are these negotiations ongoing, when there are questions about the Israeli government's willingness to pay a painful price for the release of their loved ones.
Negotiations is like a net of lies. Okay, that's our negotiation or dying. Everybody are lying or playing part of the negotiations. No one really can know what happened, but it's not the top priority as I see it.
And as I spoke with them, it was clear that they have concerns that the Israeli government, led by Prime Minister Netanyahu, doesn't see the release of hostages as quite as important as destroying Hamas.
Obviously, they're not doing enough if Itai is not home after so many days.
But ultimately, it boils down to one sentiment, which Hagit Ren, the mother of her son Itai, told me. She said that until her son is home, they're simply not doing enough. And I think for many of the families, that's ultimately what it boils down to.
We're trying to be optimistic, but the longer the days go, it's getting harder and harder.
More with Jeremy in just a bit. Welcome back to Tug of War and my conversation with CNN's Jeremy Diamond. And so should a deal come together, obviously then people will look to what happens after that and if there could be some kind of plan for what comes next. I know we've gotten some more information from Israel about their post-war plans for Gaza. So what is in this plan?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we should note that the Israeli government, even as they appear to be willing to reach a deal here, they are making clear that even if there is a deal, they still want to pursue Hamas's, quote, last bastion in Rafah. So this war may not end even if there is a temporary ceasefire, even if that ceasefire lasts 6 weeks.
Right.
But yes, the Israeli government is finally starting to put on paper a potential plan for post-war Gaza. The Israeli prime minister putting out this kind of two-page summary of principles, as it was described to us, about what governance in Gaza looks like after the war. And what it entails effectively is the Israeli military retaining full security control over the Gaza Strip, freedom of action for its military to go in and out of Gaza as it sees fit, control over not only Gaza's border with Israel, but also control over Gaza's border with Egypt. And it envisions that the rebuilding of Gaza will only take place once the Strip is fully demilitarized, and that would happen with foreign funding. But it's pretty clear that this post-governance plan, you know, goes against what the United States has said it wants to pursue after this war is over, and what a lot of Arab countries that would be needed to finance the rebuilding of Gaza are also looking for. I mean, just take alone the fact that this plan talks about maintaining this buffer zone about a kilometer into Gaza, which the United States opposes. But overall, this notion of full security control, full freedom of action, and having a pretty heavy input into how Gaza is run from the civilian side, all of this makes the establishment of a Palestinian state nearly impossible, at least in the short term. And so this runs not only counter to the U.S., but also to what many of the Arab states are looking for as well.
And so, Jeremy, we also saw earlier this week some news about the Palestinian Authority. And just to catch people up, this is the group that once controlled Gaza until Hamas took over. And they kind of sort of have control in some parts of the occupied West Bank. But both Israel and the U.S. are not totally fans of it. What happened with the Palestinian Authority this week?
Yeah, that's right. And we should also note that the majority of Palestinians in the West Bank who are governed by the PA are also not fans of the PA. And that's because the Palestinian Authority is largely seen as corrupt, as ineffective. And so there's very little faith in them. And so the United States and several Arab countries who have been contemplating providing more funding to the Palestinian Authority have been pushing the PA to reform in major ways. And this week we saw the first signs that the PA's leadership is listening to some of those demands. Mohammed Shtayyeh, the Palestinian Authority prime minister, submitting his resignation and the resignation of all of his ministers to the Palestinian Authority's president, Mahmoud Abbas. But a couple of key caveats here. First of all, Abbas, the president, is the one who really has the overwhelming majority of the power within the PA. He rules largely by decree. In addition to that, Shtayyeh is actually set to remain on in a kind of caretaker position until a new prime minister is appointed. So it is a signal that the Palestinian Authority is willing to listen to the United States, willing to listen to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, these countries that could play a role in propping up the PA in the future. But for now, it's a lot of window dressing and very little substance.
There has to be a reconstructed civilian authority. There has to be something else. Otherwise, we're just falling into that same rabbit hole, and we're going to have the same result. Remember,
now, among all of this, there's also the problem that there are so many different Palestinian factions and that they are very disjointed. The Palestinian Authority is basically run by Fatah, and Hamas has no current role in the Palestinian Authority. But there are some talks about potentially changing that, about bringing in various Palestinian factions, including potentially Hamas in a future Palestinian Authority. And they are set to meet this week in Moscow to discuss the possibility of reunification, of how to address all of these disparate factions going forward. But that presents a significant problem for Israel, which has made clear, including in this latest post-war plan that Netanyahu put forward, that there should be no role for Hamas, that there should be no role for any organizations that carry out or support acts of terrorism. And so that's going to be another major question that needs to be addressed.
So it's like when we talk about the idea of a future Palestinian state, the two-state solution, within Palestinians, there's just a lot of, you know, disparate parts, tough to come together, let alone what Israel is willing or not willing to accept.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so the question is, can there be some kind of unification of these disparate factions? And what does that actually look like? And does that unification then create a problem for Israel, which wants to have a say in what a future Palestinian Authority looks like, if indeed it includes factions like Hamas?
Well, Jeremy, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Tug of War is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Paolo Ortiz and me, David Rind. Our senior producer is Haley Thomas. Dan DeZula is our technical director, and Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of CNN Audio. We get support from Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dionora, Lenny Steinhardt, James Andres, Nicole Pesseru, and Lisa Namorow. Special thanks to Caroline Patterson, Eve Brennan, and Katie Hinman. We'll be back on Friday. Talk to you then.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.